वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 42 टेक्स्ट नंबर 2 का त्वं वरोरुएतदुहानुलेपनम् कस्यांगने वा कथयस्व साधुनः देयावयोरंगविलेपमुत्तमम् श्रेयस्ततस्ते न चिराद् भविष्यति का त्वं वरोर्वेतदुहानुलेपनम् कस्यांगने वा कथयस्व साधुना देयावयोरंगविलेपमुत्तमम् श्रेयस्ततस्ते न चिराद् भविष्यति का त्वं वरोरुवेतदुहानुलेपनम् कस्यांगने वकथयस्व साधुनः देयावयोरंगविलेपमुत्तमम् श्रेयस्ततस्ति न चिराद् भविष्यति वरोरुएतदुहानुलेपनम् कस्यांगने वा कथयस्व साधुनः देयावयोरंगविलेपमुत्तमम् ततस्ते न चिराद् भविष्यति माताजीस का त्वं वरोरुवेतदुहानुलेपनम् साधुनः तेन चिराद् भविष्यति वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन का हु त्वं यू वर उरु ओ ब्यूटिफुल थाइड वन एतत् दिस उ ह आ इंडीड अनुलेपनम ऑइंटमेंट कस्य फॉर हुम अंगने माय डियर वुमन वा और कथयस्व प्लीज टेल साधु ऑनेस्टली नह अस देही प्लीज गिव आवयो टू अस टू सो द सेकेंड टू इज नंबर टू अंग विलेपम बॉडी ऑइंटमेंट उत्तमम एक्सलेंट श्रेय बेनिफिट ततः देर आफ्टर ते योर न चिरात सून भविष्यति विल बी translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: Lord Krishna said, "Who are you, O beautiful thighed one? Ah, ointment, who is it for? My dear lady, please tell us truthfully. Give us both some of your finest ointment and you will soon gain a great boon." Purport: The Lord jokingly addressed the lady as Varoru, O beautiful thighed one. His joke was not malicious, since he was actually about to make her beautiful. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we offer our respects to everyone assembled here, and we seek the blessings of all the devotees so that we can speak appropriately on Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna has entered Mathura, and just some time back when he was in Vrindavan, he had these loving activities with his girlfriends, the gopis in Vrindavan. And then when he comes to Mathura, again there are some interactions in a conjugal mood in Mathura also. So certain points we have noted down to discuss, learning from this verse. It is mentioned in the purport that when he is calling Kubja as a very beautiful young girl, whereas she is not, She is hunchbacked. But it is mentioned that these words are not malicious. These words are not to make fun of her. But actually, he is very soon going to prove these words true. There is going to be a very radical transformation in her. So the first thing that we can understand is, Krishna's words are always true and they are always beneficial. They are never malicious. The test is on our side. Whether we can understand how his words are true or not. Because of our limited understanding and our small intelligence, sometimes those words may seem to be illogical. Sometimes those words may seem to be contradictory to what we perceive. But we should always remember, Krishna is always right. It is these statements in the scriptures where the words apparently seem to contradict the facts. Actually, these are the statements that will separate the pretenders from the believers. Till the time Krishna is having a nice time with the gopis, and sometimes even if he is following the path of dharma, these are ideas that fit into our limited brain. So we say, yes, yes, Krishna is right. Whatever Krishna is doing is right. But sometimes in the scriptures, when the descriptions given or when the statements of rishis or when the statements of the Supreme Lord, they totally contradict our understanding. That is the test of a devotee. So the believers will stick. The believers will go ahead. Whereas the pretenders will say, till now it was all right. I could understand how Krishna could do all that. It is understandable. This is impossible. It means all this is a myth. I close the book and I walk away. So this is the time when we should stick. This is the time when we should develop more faith. Instead of using our intelligence to contradict Krishna's words, we should use our intelligence in Krishna's service. Use our intelligence to understand Krishna is right. Now, let me use my intelligence to prove how Krishna is right. Let me help others understand how Krishna is always right. Let me use my intelligence for that. This faith is very important. There is a story in the life of Srila Prabhupada. How one time in the early days, before he took sannyas, he was sitting with some of his god brothers. And they were discussing this verse where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Prithvite achayata nagarati grama, sarvatra prachar hoibe moranama. In every town and village of this world, my name shall be sung. So all of his exalted god brothers, they were discussing what does it mean when it is said Prithvite. So Prithvi, simple word in Hindi, Bengali, Prithvi means the earth. And some of his god brothers were of the opinion that actually when Mahaprabhu is saying Prithvite, what he is saying is only Bharatvarsha, only the greater land of India. How can it be that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's names are sung all over the world, the Western world, so contaminated, it is impossible. Some of his god brothers even opined that actually it's not even Bharatvarsha. Because some parts of India also are so much prone to ritualism, they don't understand the essence of Vedic scriptures. Yamyamam pushpitam vacham. Flowery words of the Vedas, they are attracted to the descriptions of heaven and all. So there was a lot of argument going on, and then Prabhupada in those days was a householder. So he gave his opinion. He said, if Mahaprabhu is saying Prithvite, it actually means Prithvite. It means somebody, we don't know who, but that person will really establish the chanting of the holy names all over the world. That is the literal understanding of Prithvi. And then we know who actually did it. So, Prabhupada's spreading of this Hare Krishna movement is not some magic. It may appear magic to us. When we don't understand the whole scene, when we don't understand the background, when we don't understand what all different things have happened in the past, when we focus on a limited incident, then it appears to be magic. But the qualification to spread the holy name was already there long back when he said, Prithvi means Prithvi, Prithvi means the earth. This kind of staunch faith is what is the hallmark of a fixed up devotee. He cannot be shaken up. This applies to Krishna's words and this also applies to Krishna's pure representatives. When Hiranyakashipu had gone for a long tapasya, but he had already impregnated his wife Kayadu with the seed that later became Prahlad. So the demigods, they sought that opportunity.
And they took hold of Kayadhu and they were dragging her to the heavenly planets to imprison her so that when the child will be born, they will kill the child. One Hiranyakashipu is already causing a lot of headache. So we don't want the son of Hiranyakashipu to be born. But during this journey, Narad Muni comes here and says, wait, you can't harm Kayadhu, you can't take her anyway. The child in the womb of this Kayadhu is a great Mahabhagavat. Now this is totally contradictory to logic. Hiranyaksha was a staunch enemy of Vishnu. He was killed to take revenge against Hiranyaksha's death. Hiranyakashipu took a vow that now I will kill Vishnu. So two brothers, they would rather die than serve Vishnu. And Hiranyakashipu's son, Narad Muni is saying, is this great Mahabhagavat devotee. He is not just a neophyte devotee. He is a great Mahabhagavat devotee. So it is totally against logic. How can it be there like that? Jaisa baap, vaisa beta. No, they say like that. Here it is not like that. It is something totally contradictory. So the demigods, because they are devotees of the Lord, we know a lot of stories of Indra, how he appears to do something that does not fit into the definition of devotees. But this is such an amazing example of Indra. As soon as he hears from Narad Muni, he drops his weapons. The demigods that have come, they drop their weapons. And what is the proof that, you know, they were not doing it sentimentally, they actually accepted it. They perform a pradakshina to Kayadhu. Why? Because they want to offer respects to the Mahabhagavat devotee inside the womb, based on Narad Muni's words, but totally contradictory to logic. So, we should understand that it might take time for us to realize what is the truth. But nevertheless, let us go ahead based on hearing from authority. Who is saying these words? Not an ordinary person. Even in the case of the Pandavas also, the incident where the five Pandavas marry Draupadi. So then there is a big discussion happening. How can it be like this? There has never been a sanction in the scriptures that one woman can have multiple husbands. This is against religion. This is against dharma. So at that time, Yudhishthir Maharaj gives an argument. Yudhishthir Maharaj says, there has never been a moment when a sinful thought has entered my mind. I am so pure. So when Kunti Devi said that you share amongst yourself, and I heard that, I accepted it. So the very fact that I accepted it means it is allowed. He has so much faith in his purity that is because I did not feel any conflict. I just heard it and I accepted it. It means it is true. Then he gives some examples that many, many thousands of years ago, there was a Brahmin girl called Jatila and she had married seven rishis. Also he gives an example that the Prachetas had married Marisha together. But still, because Yudhishthira is a king, you know, his words, they have a little, and the discussion is going on. So then Vyasdev comes and Vyasdev says, whatever he is saying is true. So Yudhishthir's subtle faith in himself of his purity is proven true. But Vyasdev does not just repeat the examples. He says, he tells Drupad. Drupad is very concerned about his daughter. So he says, in her past life, Draupadi was actually an ascetic girl. She was a sadhu's daughter and she did intense tapasya to please Lord Shiva. And when Lord Shiva was pleased, she begged him for a powerful husband. But as she was praying to Lord Shiva, maybe because of that awe of seeing Lord Shiva himself, she prayed five times. So she said, please give me a powerful husband. Please give me a powerful husband. So in response to that, Lord Shiva told her that yes, in your next life, you will get five powerful husbands. And so this is what has happened now. So Vyasdev is saying something that cannot be seen. Vyasdev is giving an example from the previous life. But as soon as Vyasdev says, Drupad puts down all his doubts to rest. He says, yes, it is done. This is pure. There is no fault in this. There are so many examples. Priyavrat Maharaj, when he is confused, following the orders of Swayambhuva Manu and Narad Muni. Narad Muni says, stay in the renounced order. Swayambhuva Manu says, come and accept responsibilities. There is nobody to rule the world. So he is thinking, you know, he is my father, but he is my guru. Should I listen to my father or should I listen to my guru? But when Lord Brahma comes, Lord Brahma says, no, the need of the hour is you accept responsibilities for ruling the world. He immediately accepts it, whatever the seniors say. There is a popular English saying, when in doubt, ask for directions. It means whenever we are faced with a confusion, we should not go deeper into that confusion by staying alone and brooding, how to solve this confusion? Is this true? Is that true? When in doubt, ask for directions. Please contact somebody. Clarify it with the help of superior advice. Even when we hear from somebody, the problem is, it is said, many times we hear not to understand, but we hear to reply. So even when we are seeking advice from somebody, the whole thing is, okay, he is telling me all this, now this is how I will reply to every point that he is saying. Very rarely do we actually listen to understand what the other person is saying. So if we understand what the other person is saying, and then we have our chance, then we have our opportunity to clarify further, to ask doubts. But at the time of hearing, if we analyze our general hearing, it is always, I would not use that word rebellious, but you know, somewhere there is that mood that I believe in something and this person advising me something that is contradicting me. Now I am just noting the points one by one, not to understand them, but to reply. So if we are careful with this, we can benefit a lot. The next thing that we want to explain is, all of us have a tendency to serve. There is nobody who escapes this tendency. Here is Kubja. She is serving Kamsa. Every day she would carry this sandalwood paste. And she was one of the favorite attendants of Kamsa. So by calling out to her and saying, oh, halun, hanu lepanam. You say, oh, what is this wonderful ointment that you have? Vilepam uttamam. Actually, Krishna is indicating to Kubja, you are serving him, don't serve him. You serve me and Balram. You serve Krishna and the devotees. This is also some kind of a lesson for all of us also. We are also serving so many people. But better to stick to serving Krishna and his devotees. Now Krishna, Kubja, was not beautiful externally. She was hunchbacked. She was bent. She did not also have a beautiful face. But because she served Krishna, Krishna not only gave her external beauty, very soon he straightens her and then she develops a very fine looking body. So not only did Krishna give her external beauty, but later he also visits her home and gives her his own intimate association. He also purifies her internally. So just in response to Krishna's wish, don't serve Kamsa, serve me, serve Balram, serve the devotees. There are two effects. One is, Kubja first immediately develops external beauty. And she also develops internal beauty. She is purified of all her dirty desires in the heart. Initially there is some attraction to Krishna's bodily form. She has some sensual desires with Krishna. But when Krishna visits her home, all those desires are also destroyed and she becomes a pure devotee of Krishna. There is no physical enjoyment. So this is something very amazing. Another woman who also desired to enjoy Krishna in another form is Shurpanakha. Very soon we are celebrating Sri Ram Navami, so we thought of giving some example from Ramayana. So Shurpanakha also, when she sees Ram from a distance, she thinks, oh, I should have some company of this wonderful looking person. And to disguise herself, she is ugly. Kubja is also ugly. But Kubja does not pretend. She says, okay, whatever I have, let me fulfill the wish of Krishna. Shurpanakha disguises herself as a very beautiful goddess. And with a beautiful form, she attempts to entice Ram. So she comes and says, oh Ram, you are such a beautiful man in the forest here. I am such a beautiful young girl. Why don't we spend some time together? Why don't we enjoy? So, she clearly has a desire to enjoy Ram. Kubja has a desire to serve Krishna. And then in the background, yes, she also develops a desire when she becomes beautiful and then she thinks. But primarily here, she has a desire to serve Krishna. Shurpanakha has a desire to be served by Ram. That is not good. On top of it, when Ram replies, It's not possible. I'm already married. It is one thing to desire to enjoy someone, but it is more heinous, it is more criminal. If I cannot enjoy you, I will even stop your existing enjoyment. Yes, it is much more deeper. So what she thinks when Ram replies, no, it's not possible, I'm already married to Sita, so I cannot fulfill your wish. She says, so she is the impediment and she gets a desire to kill Sita. So think about it, how evil is Shurpanakha. One is, she wants to enjoy Ram, which is not good. And when Ram, in a very gentlemanly way, replies, not possible, you please see, check out with Lakshman. She perceives Sita as an impediment and desires to kill Sita. It means she says, if you are not for me, I will take away enjoyment from your life completely. So such a criminal mentality she has. Ram advises Lakshman to give her a suitable punishment. The nose and the ears are cut off. It means Krishna and Ram, the Supreme Lord, they don't look at our external appearance. We may be fat, we may be thin, we may be black, we may be white. Kubja is ugly, but she serves, she gets external beauty, she gets internal beauty. Shurpanakha is ugly, but she disguises herself as beautiful. But because of the ugliness inside, Ram punishes her. So what is Krishna looking at? Krishna is not looking at our bodily form. Krishna is looking at our heart. Krishna is looking at our mood. He is looking at our desire to serve. Because Kubja had beauty inside, Ram, Krishna, gave her beauty outside and also inside. But Shurpanakha, she may be beautiful outside, but she had very ugly features inside. She wanted to enjoy and stop enjoyment. So Krishna not only kept her ugliness, but also increased her ugliness. The nose and the ears were cut off. She must have become more ghastly. So, when we serve Krishna in spite of our difficulties and limitations, we might have some limitations. Our body may not be suitable for certain things. Somebody who has a big body cannot dance in kirtan to a greater extent. Somebody has non-analytical mind, so sometimes the classes appear to be boring for him. He is more comfortable with kirtans. Whatever it is, we have our limitations. We should always continue serving Krishna. Just like Krishna awarded Kubja external and internal beauty, Krishna will award us whatever is lacking in us. But if we want to enjoy Krishna, or worse, stop his enjoyment, then Krishna arranges for our downfall. We want to go a little deeper into this, that how Krishna made Kubja beautiful externally first and then internally later. When we come to devotional service, we have observed how different devotees, when they come to devotional service, there are always transformations in them. They always change. So sometimes it has been seen that there is development of qualities in a devotee that are appreciated even by worldly people. So we know of one devotee, a young boy, and he had barely spent 1 or 2 years in devotional service, but sincere to whatever extent he could serve Krishna. And at one point of time in his life, he contracted a life-threatening disease. And after he contracted a life-threatening disease, actually it was a shock. He was not supposed to get it at that age. But because of his faith and because of his chanting, we know him personally, so he sailed through the crisis as if, definitely there was some disturbance because it is a life-threatening disease, but more or less as if untouched, undisturbed. Usually when you get a disease, you know, the very word, dis-ease, you know, your ease is disturbed. It means it is uncomfortable. What to speak of when someone of us at a young age contracts a life-threatening disease, something that can be fatal. It's actually a very scary thought. So on one side, your body is crumbling, your body is getting destroyed, you can feel it, how there is loss of strength, there is no vigor for anything. The more dangerous part is, seeing your body crumbling at a time when all of your peers are enjoying, the mind can in one sense accept defeat. The mind sometimes loses and says, I don't know why this is happening with me. And at this age, and even though I'm a devotee, maybe something is wrong somewhere. So either you leave devotional service, or you just sulk. You just become some kind of a depressed devotee, not interested in anything, and just constantly thinking, why me, why this is happening with me, and like that. But this devotee, we know, neither he gave up devotional service, neither he became some kind of a depressed devotee. He did whatever he could. He underwent treatment. It took a long, long time for him to get well. Something like 1.5 years. And now he's doing good. So, these kind of transformations that happen, even in a neophyte devotee, are appreciated by worldly people. So many of his friends said, how did you face all this? It's very difficult. If this would have happened to any one of us, it would have been very depressing. Sometimes a devotee, when he starts chanting, you know, he develops some concentration, so he is able to study nicely. And so this is appreciated by other friends. We say, oh, when you are chanting, now we see you have better concentration. Sometimes a devotee develops some kind of a practical intelligence. So these are the qualities that will be appreciated by worldly people. But a devotee understands the development of these qualities that are visible and appreciable by worldly people. This is not a destination. These are some milestones on the path. We don't want to practice devotional service just to get more concentration and study nicely and do whatever we were doing before. We don't want devotional service just to have the mental strength to go through a life-threatening disease. That's not the goal of devotional service. If it comes, no problem, we accept it. He understands there is a long way to go ahead. And when such a devotee goes on ahead in devotional service, in addition to all these qualities that are appreciated by the worldly people, he even develops qualities like humility. In due course of time, he will develop qualities like dependence on Guru and Krishna. He might also develop qualities, sense control. Yes. Now, from a worldly perspective, humility is not a good quality. Somebody who is humble is seen as an ambitionless person. Somebody who is sense controlled is, you know, he does not want to enjoy the world. Somebody who has a dependence on Guru and Krishna in the worldly perspective, he is a kind of a weakling. Kya hamesha kuch bhi ho gaya to Krishna ne kya bola, Guru ne kya bola? Don't you have your own brains? So what we are saying is, the initial part, the qualities that we develop are appreciated by devotees. Later, which is the actual goal of life, is to develop qualities that may or may not be appreciated by worldly people, but Krishna will appreciate. The Vaishnavas will appreciate. Guru Maharaj will definitely appreciate these qualities. It means these advanced symptoms, although they will not be appreciated by worldly people, but that is the goal that we are all hankering for. It means Krishna first makes us beautiful externally, in the sense people will recognize us and they will think, oh, you're a nice person, you're a devotee, you have concentration, you are practical in your dealings. But if we have prolonged contact with Krishna, just like Kubja, we will also develop internal beauty. And that internal beauty may not be appreciated by the worldly people. So Kubja, when she became a beautiful young woman, when Krishna straightened her, obviously everyone is watching. So they must have appreciated Kubja. Oh, you are looking beautiful now. But later, when Krishna made her into a pure devotee, you know, she must have become humble. She must have become a simple. So there is no mention how everyone came to her and said, oh, you are such a humble lady. This is very nice. This is the goal of our life also. So probably at that time, there must have been some criticism of Kubja. And those of us who are genuinely trying to practice devotional service, we will face this conflict one day. That till a certain point of time, whatever we do is in alignment with the definition of good from the worldly perspective. And that is the time till when people around us encourage us. Achha, achha, aap bhakti karte hai, bahut achha hai. You become more cooperative with them. But at one point of time, you know, after that limit, you want to give more preference to devotional service and want to give less preference to this worldly understanding of what is good. That is the time when the conflict starts. That is the time when worldly people might even criticize you. Say, nowadays you don't spend time with us. So that is the test of the devotee. Does he go on or he stops just witnessing the milestones on the path, does he stop himself from going to the final destination of devotional service? Krishna is an amazing person. He always looks at the essence. When you are flavoring a cake, a few drops of essence gives the flavor to the whole cake. Similarly, Krishna is looking at the essence. He is not looking at the whole life that we have. He is looking at the essence. Does this devotee have sincerity? Does this devotee have a desire to serve? If he has that, if the devotee has that, then Krishna is ready to transform him. Krishna is ready to help him. We had one point, but we'll skip it. If we have time, then we may take it. Something that we also wanted to discuss was, Kubja is not from a simple, small village. She's from a city. So more chances of her being artificial and calculative in her dealings. Yes. Generally speaking, villagers are simple-hearted. And generally speaking, it's not something that it's a fault. It's not that, you know, people who are staying in the cities do that willingly. It is just the environment. The way passion, rajogun functions, the way people around you talk with you, you are forced, you are dragged in. Yes. So one would expect Kubja to also have manipulative dealings. One would expect Kubja to not be a simple woman. But she is such a simple woman. In one sense, Kamsa was looking forward to that sandalwood paste that day. That was a regular practice. But Kubja totally neglected that. And just on the request of Krishna, she immediately turned herself and applied all that ointment on Krishna and Balaram's body herself in the middle of the street. So think about it. What a great risk. Just the absence of the sandalwood is a reason enough for Kubja to be tortured to death. Where is my sandalwood paste? Not there? Okay. Hang her. Not only she is not having the sandalwood paste, but she is applying it to Krishna and Balaram, who are the staunch enemies of Kamsa. But she is not even doing it secretly, behind the bushes, behind the tree where nobody sees, and it is only between Krishna and the devotee. She is doing it right there in the open. And she is doing it herself. She is not even asking somebody, you know, you do it. Because if Kamsa asks me, at least I will say, somebody stole away the sandalwood paste from me and they did it. How can I explain it? I am not to blame. So just imagine, in front of everyone, she is defying the authority of Kamsa by applying the sandalwood paste personally to beautify Krishna and Balaram. What a brave task. But this bravery is not an expression of her calculative nature. Because if she would have been calculative, she would have said, you want sandalwood? There is my home nearby. Please come there. I'll reach there in 5 minutes. We'll do it. I'll give you sandalwood paste. Just try to appreciate her simplicity. You want it? All right. So in front of everyone, not paying any regard to the dangers involved, as a simple devotee, what does a devotee do? He does what is told. Simplicity. Without duplicity. So Krishna says, Vayam, both of us, why don't you apply sandalwood? She says, okay, I'll apply. She comes and applies herself, totally oblivious. So, when a rich man gives charity like a rich man, it is appreciated. When a poor man helps somebody as per his capacity, that is also appreciated. We understand this is the norm. Everyone does what is suitable as per his position. But, when somebody crosses the limits of what is expected in general from him and does something extraordinary, that really touches the heart. Very recently, the most richest man in the world, he developed a desire for charity. He's already a charitable person, but he's already pledged. He has 3 sons, but he has pledged something like 70% of his wealth to charity after he dies. So the whole world is thinking, what a person. How can he do this? Today are the times of selfishness. Today are the times when the beggar to the capitalist, everyone is trying to accumulate, and this richest man is saying, 70% of my wealth is for charity, to help others, to benefit others. So it is beyond the norm. There is something called as social responsibility, community responsibility in the corporate sector nowadays. So every company they pledge a certain amount of their yearly earnings for humanitarian causes. But till now, none of these companies ever did any social work. Why are they doing it? Because the government has announced, if you do it, you get some tax benefits. If they were really interested in doing something, they would have done it long back. So now everyone is doing it. But if you go 10 years back, if some companies were involved in some social work 10 years back when there was no tax benefits, it means those companies are really interested. They have broken the norm. So it means, although Kubja is from the city and is expected to be calculative in her dealings, but she is such a simple girl, and Krishna immediately catches this contrast. Krishna loves this contrast. Krishna likes this when somebody who is expected to behave in a certain way crosses that limit, goes beyond, walks that extra mile, as they say, and serves Krishna, serves the devotees. Sometimes inviting danger to his own existence. That is what conquers the unconquerable. The gopis also, they also pleased Krishna, but they also faced a lot of dangers. Their danger probably was not physical death. Their danger was social death. If they would have been caught doing what they were doing, they would have become social outcasts. Their brothers, husbands, fathers, sons would have killed them by their words. That would have been really bad for the gopis, but they did it. Is it not said that a person who dies physically dies once? But when a person is insulted, he dies every living day. So the gopis also undertook risk. And Kubja is also undertaking risk. But the gopis' risk was more, because once they are detected that even though they have some relationships, they are going to please Krishna, that would have been social death. And they would have died every day. It means it's a great risk. That's why the gopis are much more dearer to Krishna. But here is Kubja, who has also taken a risk. She would have been killed by Kamsa physically. But she also took a risk. And that's why Kubja is also very special. Kubja is also very dear to Krishna. So these are these amazing devotees in Mathura. Akrura is from Mathura, but he is such a pure devotee of Krishna. He also goes and serves, does his small part in Krishna's mission. Kubja is from the city, but she goes and serves selflessly Krishna. There are the ladies of Mathura who are described. When Krishna and Balaram are walking on the streets, then the ladies of Mathura say, "Oh, what pious activities, what austerities have the gopis done that these beautiful faces, which are visible to us today, were visible to the gopis of Vrindavan all their life, 11 years. Every single day, morning, afternoon, evening, they were seeing the beautiful faces of Krishna and Balaram. What tapasya they have done, they are discussing." So this is another example of simplicity. Even though the environment in which they are staying is not simple, it is very complex. A city is very complex, even to exist. But the ladies of Mathura are so simple, they are saying, "So nice." It means they are appreciating the gopis of Vrindavan. They don't have envy for the gopis of Vrindavan. They are not saying, "Are, abhi tak 11 years they had the company of Krishna Balaram, but now we'll show them." 11 years is, what is 11 years? 11 years they got pleasure. Now for the rest of the life, we will have the pleasure of seeing Krishna Balaram. No, they take a humble position. They say, "How fortunate are the gopis of Vrindavan." So this is such an amazing lesson for all of us, that we do what we can do. In whatever little way it is possible for us to do, in whatever environment we are staying, we go ahead in devotional service. When we really have a strong desire, there is a conflict, there is a struggle. But after some time, the environment stops affecting us. It is just between us and our sincerity. So it is a struggle for all of us, since this temple exists in a city environment. All of us who are attending here, we also are part of the city life. Some of us are working, some of us are preaching in the city. It means all of us have contact with this rajogun, with the material energy in this form. It means somewhere we will also be, there is a chance that we will be infected by these kind of calculative nature in our dealings. And as soon as we become calculative, we lose simplicity. And simplicity is one of the important characteristics to advance in devotional service. So better we become aware of this fact, better we glorify Akrura, Kubja, the ladies of Mathura, worship them for their simplicity, even while staying in a complex environment. And in this way, we also, while staying in a city, can remain simple in our dealings with Guru, in our dealings with the Vaishnavas. What can I do humbly? What can I do in a selfless way? So wherever we are, whatever we are, to the extent possible, let us become selfless. Krishna will definitely appreciate the contrast. When a person staying in a simple environment stays simple, it is praiseworthy. But from Krishna's perspective, it may not be appreciable. But when a person stays in a complex environment and he attempts even a little bit to become simple, to become selfless, the contrast is glaring. The contrast attracts Krishna. It means those of us who don't have a pious background, we have a greater opportunity to become dear to Krishna by showing even a little sincerity. If someone has already a pious background before coming to Krishna consciousness, Krishna knows your past. Krishna knows, you know, whatever he is practicing, whatever purity he has, is a carryover from the past. It may not be due to the struggle that this devotee is undergoing after he came to Krishna consciousness. So somebody is simple hearted right from his childhood, and then he comes to devotional service, and then he understands the value of simplicity. This simplicity is a great asset. There is no doubt about it. But somebody who was very manipulative in his dealings before he came to devotional service, and then when he comes to devotional service, he hears, we should be very simple in our dealings, and then he is struggling every single day to give up his manipulative nature and to become simple. That contrast will capture the heart of Krishna much more than the previous devotee. So from our understanding, a pious background is very good. It facilitates. And yes, it facilitates. But from a Krishna conscious perspective, if we don't have a pious background and if we are struggling every day to become favorable from Krishna's perspective, we have a much greater chance to advance. So with these few thoughts, we'll stop here. If somebody has any questions or if somebody has any comments, then we can have that. So since there are no comments and no questions, actually the class has ended, but I'll ask Radha Gopinath Prabhu. We have 5 minutes, so can we take something? Yes, so that's why we asked. One person was recently asking us, when Krishna saves his devotees, why does he make it so dramatic? And very honestly, this person was asking us, he was saying, Prahlad underwent so much torture. So if it had to be shown to Hiranyakashipu, don't mess with my devotee, he's very dear to me, it could have happened at the first instance of the torture. But there is a series that Prahlad undergoes, and it is definitely every single torture that is given to Prahlad is in itself a very dangerous thing. Putting him in a cage with poisonous snakes, putting him in boiling oil, throwing him off a cliff, putting him below an elephant, all that is very... So he was asking, why does he have to wait till the last moment? And this person also gave an example of how in the attempted disrobing of Draupadi, it took some time. Why did not Krishna save Draupadi right in the initial period when they dragged her into the assembly, just do something? If magic can happen in the form of supplying unlimited sari, same magic can happen that something falls on Dushasan, something, anything can happen. We don't know how Krishna can achieve his purposes. So he was saying, why did he have to wait till the last moment? So we wanted to speak a little bit on this. Krishna is infinite. So Krishna is unlimited, infinite reasons why he does a particular thing. So we can never fully understand why Krishna behaves like this, but we wanted to offer something with regard to this. One reason is he wants the devotee's qualities to shine. Till the time this did not happen, nobody knew how dear Draupadi is to Krishna. They thought, okay, Draupadi is definitely an amazing lady. She came from the sacrificial fire. But in this instance, she called out helplessly to Govinda. So it meant she is a very exceptional devotee of Krishna. So Krishna arranges for these difficulties so that devotees outshine others. Krishna also wants to show How evil are these people who are tormenting his devotees? How evil is Hiranyakashipu? Just because his son does not accept his views, he is ready to expose him to the worst torture. In the Draupadi Vastraharan attempted disrobing story, here is Duryodhan, here is Dushasan, they don't mind trying to disrobe a very chaste and a very respectful woman who has a pure birth in front of everyone, in front of all the masses. The daughter-in-law, the royal daughter-in-law, is being attempted to disrobe. So think about it, what an evil person he is. And this person himself, at the end of the Mahabharata, after Karna was killed, after Dushasan was killed, there is an incident on the 17th day of the Mahabharata war. Gandhari is doing some tapasya somewhere far away from Kurukshetra, and she hears Karna is dead, Dushasan is dead. She hears all her sons are dead, only one son is remaining, Duryodhan. So on one side, she understands that Duryodhan is not a good person, but on one side, the putra prem is still there. So she leaves her tapasya and comes to Kurukshetra with a singular desire. Because of her tapasya, she has acquired tejas. She has acquired mystical powers. So she thinks, at least on the 18th day, towards the end, I will empower my last son to win. So she comes, she reaches the evening time of the 17th day, and she tells Duryodhan, tomorrow morning, you take a bath and come to me without any clothes. And Duryodhan goes, and next day he takes a bath and he comes. As he's entering the queen's tent, so this Gandhari's tent, it means it's a big, huge tent. There are many sections of the tent, entrances to the tent. So as he's entering, as he's in the outer portion, he comes, he gives off his clothes and is about to enter. That is the time when Krishna is coming out. Krishna also understood that Gandhari is there. So as an elderly person, Krishna had gone to offer his respects to Gandhari. So as Krishna is coming out, he sees Duryodhan without any clothes. So he says, you know, what is this? So he said, I'm going there without clothes. That's what she said. So Krishna says, that's all right, but you know, we are part of a good cultured society. So, are you comfortable with this? You are going to see your mother, you are an elderly person. Not good to go without any clothes. So Duryodhan accepts that proposal. If Duryodhan would have firmly believed this is not good, he would have at least argued. Arjun, how staunchly he believed, let them rule. Let me become a beggar. The whole first and majority second chapter is just arguments of Arjun with Krishna. How I am right and you are wrong. And Krishna has to give detailed arguments to prove you are wrong, I am right. So when somebody believes in something, even when another party tries to convince, there is argument, there is back and forth. But when Krishna said, he said, yes, you are true. There is no argument from Duryodhan's side. It means Duryodhan understands it is non-gentlemanly to go naked in front of the elders. So if you understand that it is non-gentlemanly, it is not good to go without clothes in front of elders, you did not have this intelligence when you were attempting to disrobe Draupadi. So for himself, he wants to cover himself. But for Draupadi, he would rather have her stripped in front of the whole assembly. How evil is Duryodhan? So this is also another reason which we felt is why Krishna allows for things to go to quite some extent before he intervenes. Now the world knows who is Draupadi and who is Duryodhan. It's clear. But one reason that we also wanted to present, and maybe Radha Gopinath Prabhu can comment on that. Before coming to this reason, we want to give a small background. One time there was one yatra of this temple, and His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj had taken devotees, I believe, to Kirchor Gopinath temple. I may be wrong in a few details, but I have heard this story. I was not part of this. So now it is evening time and the class went on for long and it is quite late. And the plan was that at the end there will be distribution of that Kirchor Gopinath kheer to all the devotees who have come. So the plan was the class will end, then there will be kirtan. After kirtan, it will be distributed to everyone. But since it was exceptionally late, it was really late. So the yatra management out of concern for the devotees, and the next day also they wanted to travel somewhere. So out of concern for them, they said, because the class has gone long, what we will do is, they purchased all the kheer pots, and they made arrangement in such a way that all the bus leaders got those pots, and the arrangement was that everyone after the class and the kirtan will board their buses, and in the journey, that pot will be distributed to every devotee, and the devotees will have it in the bus. So after the class and the kirtan, Maharaj asked, where are the pots? Then somebody conveyed that actually the pots, because it's very late and it's very tiring and we have been out all the day and then tomorrow also it's very busy. So we have taken a decision that we'll distribute the pots in the bus. So His Holiness Radhananda Maharaj says, no, you bring the pots here. So it's already late. Then the pots were distributed to every one person. And then Maharaj spoke another 15 or 20 minutes on what is this pot of kheer. He spoke on what is this kheer, what is the story of this kheer, how Kheerchor Gopinath originally stole this kheer for Madhavendra Puri. And you know, this is the whole history. And then he also spoke how to honor the kheer. Something like that. Something to this effect. That he created a whole mood. And then the devotees, they were all the while having this pot in their hands and they were listening to this katha. And now when the right mood came, then Maharaj said, now let us honor this kheer. And everyone had such a blissful face. They were not honoring the sweet. They were honoring the kheer. They were honoring the love. They were honoring the emotions, the sentiments of Gopinath, that this is my prasad for you. So later then, I believe Radhan Maharaj had a word with the Yatama, and then he said that what you are doing is also right, but I wanted to give them an experience. An experience is something that lasts longer. So from a management perspective, it made great sense to distribute the pot of kheer in the buses. We would have said half an hour. But from Maharaj's perspective, even if we sleep late half an hour, one day, doesn't matter. We compensate here and there. But what mattered was, when we go to Kheerchor Gopinath temple and we have the pot of kheer in our hand, we understand how valuable is this kheer. So we thought that, you know, this is the way to create deep impressions on the hearts of people. The way to create deep impressions on the hearts of people is to give an experience. And when there is an experience, the whole environment and the mood is created. People don't remember today how they slept late that night and how it was a totally fatigue-laden experience that day. But they still remember that beautiful pot of kheer and how Maharaj glorified the kheer and how he explained the kheer. So experience outlasts the difficulties. So we thought that why does Krishna do this? Because in general, worldly people, they do not understand. If a devotee is in difficulty and Krishna comes and immediately saves him, so definitely the devotee understands Krishna's love for the devotee, and Krishna understands how the devotee truly loves. There is no need for all those different events to happen. But as we mentioned, Krishna is infinite, and Krishna has infinite lessons. Krishna has infinite thoughts. So one is, he wants to glorify these devotees. One is, he wants to show how evil are the perpetrators of that evil act. Third is, he wants to impress on the hearts of the general masses how in no situation will Krishna ever cease to be Achyuta. Krishna is Achyuta means he never fails to protect his devotees. So if he protects in the early part, there is no problem. The devotee understands. And even when Krishna protects the devotee late, the devotee understands. But you and me will not understand. You and me will not have that impression on the heart. But when we read these pastimes of how Draupadi was, she went to Dhritarashtra, she went to Dronacharya, she went to Kripacharya, she went to Bhishma, there was no help available. She looked at her five husbands, no help available. She tried to pull the sari herself, no help available. Just think about it, you know, the how much the pain, you can actually feel Draupadi's pain, that no shelter available other than the Supreme Lord. And in this way, finally, when you reach the end point, then she raised her hands and said, oh Govinda, please help me. And Krishna saved her. It makes a deep impression on our dull hearts. So this is why Krishna has his, you know, amazing ways to deal. And it's very difficult and it's very impossible for us to understand on our own, why does Krishna do this? So, That's why it is mentioned here that even if Krishna is saying, Varoru, he is saying, oh beautiful thighed one, and it is against all logic, she is not beautiful, she does not have a beautiful thigh, she is not beautiful internally, externally, whatever it is. But when Krishna says you are beautiful, you are beautiful. It is just a matter of time. We have to have faith. So with these few words, we'll end the class. If somebody has any questions or comments, we can have them again. Radha Gopinath, would you like to? We also have... Yes, bro? Somebody raised his hand behind. Alright, so since there are no comments and questions, so there is one question here. A microphone is coming.
Very well. Prabhuji, you spoke regarding Surpanakha approaching Rama, and then Ram said, saying that I am married, so to say, but Lakshmana was also married.
The thing was that Ram in that situation wanted to, you know, he wants to directly say no. Because when the introduction happened, the Valmiki Ramayana says, he asks her that in such a place, in the thickest of forest, Dandakaranya, a gentlemanly girl will not roam alone. So he says, are you some Rakshasi who has beautiful, who has amazing powers to become beautiful? And she accepts it. So it means, you know, he was just saying that, you know, why do you want to do all this? And he knew that Lakshman is also being is also married. So obviously, Lakshman will also say no. But since Ram is gentleman, you know, he can't say, you fool, do you know who I am? I am the Supreme Lord. How dare you even approach me? Ram is not like that. So he, in a very pleasurable way, he said no. Yes, there are different ways of saying no. So Ram as a gentleman, he says, no, no, I am married. So you better approach Lakshman. So Lakshman also, he does not agree. What does Lakshman say? Lakshman say, to tell you the facts, I am a servant of Ram. So when you become my wife, you will become the wife of a servant. Do you want to become the wife of a servant? No. So then you again go to Ram. So that was the simple exchange there. There was no malice there also. It was not that, you know, Ram was trying to hurt her or something. He's just, in a very pleasurable way, he's saying, not possible. Please don't have these thoughts. So is it okay? You want to say something? Thank you very much for your patient listening. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnav Vrinda ki jai.